Hi, and welcome to the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. I am your host, Kat Jepsen, a canine nutritionist with an innate obsession with dogs and the natural ways in which we are driven to live because of them. So, let's get to it. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. I am your host, Kat Jepsen, as always, and tonight I am joined by Stacey, who runs Hozo Hounds. Hello, Stacey, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me. It's so exciting to actually finally get to catch up properly.
I know, I'm really looking forward to it. So tonight, me and Stacey are going to be discussing why the impacts of the overuse of pharmaceuticals triggered a deep dive into alternative and holistic methods. So as always, to kick us off, Stacey, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and Ted, who obviously is your fur baby right now?
So, I'm Stacey. I run Hozo Hounds. And Hozo is a Navajo word, which kind of roughly translates as peace, balance, beauty, harmony, just all the things that kind of I want to achieve in life and I want for us and for our dog. So it's kind of looking at everything from a holistic point of view. And Ted is my gorgeous nearly nine-year-old Cocker Spaniel, who is a failed foster through the amazing Spaniel Aid. He walked in about 7 years ago, and as soon as he walked in, I was like, well, he's not going anywhere, and just fell in love. I was smitten from the minute he walked in, and he's taught me so much. He's a typical fiery redhead, just absolutely epic. He's very talkative, does like to have a chat with us, but he's taught me so much. And he's just brilliant. I love him to bits, and we work really proactively with him in terms of all his treatments and supporting him, because when he came to us, he was a ball fling addict. He had a lovely previous owner, but she just didn't realize the kind of needs of a Cocker Spaniel, and obviously we were able to give him that, but he was a ball fling addict. He was neutered at 6 months, so now we're working to just support his joints and support him as much as possible from a holistic point of view. So he's got osteoacupuncture, and you know, from a nutrition perspective, he's got a whole team, bless him. He's like a sportsman. So
yeah,
he's wicked, and he just teaches me stuff all the time, and I love him to bits. So yeah, he's great.
Aww. He is. He's lovely. He came on, didn't he, just before we started recording. So. He's such a cute boy. Oh, that's amazing. So when you say he was a failed foster, you mean that you were supposed to foster him, but that failed and you kept him?
Yeah. The lovely Maxine, who's sadly passed away now, was one of the Spaniel Aid team, and she said she worked her magic cauldron. She'd sat around her cauldron and kind of magicked him up for us, because she knew we were looking for a second dog, but we said we wanted to foster at the time just to see how it was having two. But the minute he walked in, I was like, well, you're not going anywhere, because he was just gorgeous and just a sweetie. So lovely.
Yeah, I can imagine. He looks like that. He looks like a sweet boy. Bless him.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did your natural journey begin? What did that look like?
Oh, now this is the long bit. Are you ready? Is everybody
I'm
got
ready.
Tea?
Yeah, I think mine's gone cold, but that's fine. I'll still sip it.
Well, my journey didn't start with Ted. My journey started with my other dog, Shadow, who was English Springer Spaniel. I, as you can probably tell, I'm a Spaniel fanatic, just love them, beautiful breed, grew up with them, so I was used to them and love them. And when it was time for us to get our own, like our first family dog, I was set on it being a Springer, because I'd grown up with them.
Yeah.
And we probably hadn't done enough research into the breeder, and we just went and met these people and just literally picked the puppy up that day, 10 weeks old, hadn't been vaccinated, beautiful little man. We'd all fallen head over heels with him. And as dutiful new pet parents, we whisked him off to the vet, and he had his first round of vaccinations and a worming tablet and a flea and tick treatment. Yeah. And that afternoon, I think it was either that afternoon or the next day. No, it must have been that afternoon. We'd put the tick and the spot on him, and he'd laid on the sofa, which we had a leather sofa, and he rolled over and went to sleep, because that's what puppies do. And about an hour or so later, he got up, and the top layer of my sofa was kind of like missing, like you could see where the it had taken something on off, and I was like, well, he hasn't scratched it. And I was like, whoa, if that's what the chemicals in the, are doing to my snow coat, what are they doing to my dog? So that was kind of the first red flag, and I was like, okay. And essentially for the first 6 weeks that we had him, he was in and out of the vets kind of every other week, and probably more than that actually for the first 3 weeks. He had two really nasty reactions to the L4 jab, and ended up on the second time with like a golf ball size lump on his neck.
Bless him.
Ended back at the emergency out of hours because he had more gastro problems, and he was sick and lethargic, and he was on IV drips. He went through everything. It was one of the emergency vets that said to me, we've had a couple of puppies come through that have had trouble with this L4 jab. And I was like, oh, okay, well, nobody had mentioned that to us when we took him in.
Yeah.
So off I go down a rabbit hole, and off I go on a little research project. And essentially, to cut a long story short, I just went on this journey of discovery into that the L4 was actually quite a tricky one for a lot of people, and that just how dangerous it could potentially be for a lot of dog, and weighing up the risk and balance of whether you need it versus, and for the fact that this was a puppy that wasn't actually even out in the wide world yet, because his other vaccinations weren't in place, for want of a better word, that he wasn't actually out and about, he wasn't swimming in waters, he wasn't out in the grass, in the fields and the streams and all the potential points of problems, I suppose. I was a bit like, why have I just given this to my puppy? So we got him through it, and he seemed to bounce through it, and he'd been on the special gastro food and started learning about that, and then discovered raw. And off we went down the raw journey, and I had a spreadsheet for his bone and his meat and his muscle and his offal and everything. And he was thriving. He was doing so well. And he got to about 8 months. We were like, he's doing really well now. He's a happy boy. And that's when Ted turned up, because we were like, you know, he really needs a playmate. He's a young dog. He loved going out to daycare with a friend of mine. And I said, yeah, let's get another one. So that's when we decided to foster. In came Ted. They hit it off like a house on fire. They were brilliant together. They were best buddies. And for the next year, everything just was epic. They were great mates.
Aww.
We had brilliant walks. They would share toys. They'd just do everything together. They'd sleep together on the sofa. They'd sleep with my boys on the sofa, cuddled up. And, life was great.
Yeah.
And then July, where are we now? 2018 is when everything went belly up. So he'd been neutered in the February of that year because he'd been a little bit hormonal, and in hindsight again now I probably wouldn't have done it because of subsequent stuff that happened, but you know, you take advice from everyone at the time, trainers and behaviorists and the vet, and let's get him done. So he was neutered, and he recovered from that really well, was still on the fresh feed diet. And then in July, we were out on a walk. It was an early morning walk because obviously it was quite warm at that point. And he wasn't walking the same, and he was really lethargic and he was really slow. And I was like, something not quite right. He wouldn't jump over the stream and the places where we were that he would normally do.
Yeah.
And I was like, so, and then he wouldn't jump in the car at the end of the walk. I was like, something's not right. So we got home and he was still really lethargic, and I could see that he was starting to look almost lame. So we took him to the vets and they said, oh, he's got like a temperature of 40. It was really, so he was hot. He was not doing well. He obviously had an infection or something was going on.
Yeah.
And again, he was in and out of the vets for days on antibiotics and trying to get his temperature down. And I then took him to a holistic vet that even said that actually, you know, he needs further investigations, because I wanted a second opinion. And she said, look, there's not much I can do unless we get further investigations. He needs spinal taps, that type of stuff, because he just wasn't getting any better.
Yeah.
So off he went to the RVC at Milton Keynes, and he was there for a week. And he had a really rare autoimmune condition that only 10 other dogs had. And
wow.
I am absolutely convinced after reading and figuring everything out that it was triggered. Everything was triggered off the back of the L4. I could be wrong. Obviously, I'm not a vet, but everything that I've read and everything that kind of supports that theory about the autoimmune conditions coming off of that particular jab, I would. And the pharmaceutical assault his body went through at the very beginning from the flea and the wormer, he didn't have any more after that one with the, when obviously he took the layer of skin off my sofa. I was like, that's not happening again. But I think there was that whole episode of just his immune system just being utterly overwhelmed with, and his liver trying to detox everything, just complete overwhelm.
Yeah. Especially at such a young age as well.
Absolutely. He was a baby and he hadn't had anything up until 10 weeks. He still had his maternal antibodies. He would have still been in a really good place.
Yeah.
Later on, knowing that, I would have done things very differently, but hindsight's a wonderful thing. So he came home. He was probably home by early August. And sorry, that's Ted barking now. He's come to say hi.
No, it's fine. Don't worry. It's fine.
And come December, it was just being weaned off all of his steroids and chemo drugs because that's what he'd been on for that time to support his system.
Yeah.
And he bit one of my boys on the cheek, and that there was no ladder of aggression. There was no warning signs. There was no triggers. There was none of the things that you would typically see in a lead up to a bite. There was nothing. Yeah. He was laying on the sofa, woke up and just went. There was nothing. And I was like, maybe it's just the effects of the steroids and things are just, you know, he just unsettled. So we didn't dismiss it. We were aware of it, and we managed the boys around him. And both my boys are very dog savvy, but we just became aware of it and just thought, we'll be proactive. We won't leave him alone with the boys, and we'll just make sure that he's not sat on the sofa alone with those. So we put management in place. Then he started to get a little bit more testy with Ted, and there was a few more disagreements between them. So all of this was kind of building up, and I was like, this isn't right. So we spent about the next 18 months or so working with various behaviorists, him being at the holistic vet, but the boy just wasn't happy. He couldn't settle. And then COVID hit, and all of our walks were just kind of filled with people because everyone was out getting their daily exercise. So it didn't matter how early I went out, there were just people everywhere. And this poor boy just couldn't get a break from kind of overwhelm and overstimulation. In August 2020, the amazing Spaniel Aid took him and rehomed him for us, which was probably the hardest thing I've had to do in my life. It broke me. But we couldn't give him the home that he needed. He needed, because the conventional vets were just saying, we need to be put down. And I'm like, I'm not going to put this dog down. He's been through so much. And he's an incredible dog, but he needs a different environment, and we can't give him that right now. You know, my dogs are a lot younger. You know, there's a lot of noise, hustle and bustle. We're mid-terrace, so there's dogs playing out the front on a green. And Ted and all those other things, and it was stressing everybody out, and everybody just wasn't in a good place. So the decision had to be made for him more than anybody. I mean, we were all heartbroken when we did it, and you know, I can talk about it now, but that's only been the last couple of months that I can probably properly talk about it, because otherwise, it was just horrid, absolutely horrid, because there's the guilt of I put him through all of that stuff with not knowing, obviously, I didn't know, and I would do so differently now, but knowing that there were choices that I could have made that were different, I didn't have to give him those jabs. I could have done things differently, was a really, really hard lesson to learn.
Yeah, I know it is so as well. But I think, and it's hard as well, like you say, when you look back, I think when you are at a point on your journey like we are, I say we, meaning those who are so immersed in the rabbit hole that you basically become the rabbit. It's probably one way. You only come up for some fresh grass every now and then. But it is so hard not to blame yourself. It really is. Like, I do strongly think that a lot of what happened to Betty is based on the pharmaceuticals that I exposed her to. and the food that I exposed her to when she was a puppy. And the same with Boris. I do think Boris's epilepsy stems from chemical fleeing worms, and I'm pretty sure they had the lepto vaccine, if I'm being completely honest. I'm pretty sure they did. And obviously Boris has had to live with epilepsy all his life. And I just think sometimes I look back and I just think, you know, it makes me feel so stupid, you know, like now knowing what I know. But then I think if I hadn't have been through it, I still wouldn't know, you know. So it's sort of like bittersweet in that kind of respect. And sometimes like the hardest things you have to go through can be the ones that make the biggest changes for everybody, don't they? So, but it is hard. It's tough to, I mean, I never used to talk about what happened with me and Betty. I only saw this year when I started this podcast. I mean, I don't think I only told a handful of people when I had the shop and everything like that. And that's just because I just don't talk about stuff. But I have to say, now that I do, I find it, you know, the community is so supportive, and there are a lot more people out there who have suffered like we have. So I do think it's great to share these experiences.
Absolutely. And I think as well, now that there's awareness for me in terms of, so if I, you know, if I'm speaking to a client or I'm speaking to someone and there's a little alarm, like, well, maybe we could, you know, is that a gut microbiome test? Is this a this that we need to do? What the little flags and the things that I would now do have done differently with Shadow, like the gut microbiome and tailoring his diet even more. Even though he was on raw, I would have been massive into food energetics. I would have been working from him from a much more holistic perspective in terms of supporting him. So yeah. I think all of those things, as horrific and as heartbreaking as it was to go through, it's given me so much more now in my kind of repertoire of being able to support other people.
Yeah,
because it's part of that journey and where I've got to now. Sorry, Ted is just rolling around.
It's fine. It's a podcast about dogs. It's absolutely fine. Don't you worry about it at all.
You might have to edit that bit out.
But I think you're 100% right. Like every single experience you have, even I think the toughest ones, they're the ones that force you down the rabbit hole in the first place. And you know, if we hadn't have been through those, then we wouldn't have tried to figure out so much. Which again, like when you come to a position where you're helping other dogs, and you know, somebody comes to you, you can kind of make those connections that might have been overlooked because obviously you've seen it before. And then obviously with all this about the gut microbiome and behavior, it helps you kind of be the best at what you are because you've seen it so many times. And I think there are lots and lots and lots of dogs who don't have reactions to the chemical treatments at the vets.
But yeah, there's always going to be those ones that will, and I think they should be discredited for the fact that they are having those reactions and an awareness of the fact that it can happen. And it might be that they've had it 4 or 5 times before, but it's on that fifth time that it happens.
Yeah, exactly. And that could be just like because of a toxic buildup from the 5 before, or it could just be that it just so happens at that time. Maybe their immune system's a little bit more suppressed than what it was previously, and this is why it causes a reaction. But I think the main thing is that most of the reactions aren't reported to the vets either, are they? Because they happen away from the surgery or away from the practice. And some people might not even, you know, make that connection that that reaction is linked to the booster, because people aren't made aware of the possible side effects when, you know, when they go in for the appointment. And this is where the problem is. Like, I think if the majority of pet parents were fully informed about the risks and, you know, data was made available for everyone to see, then I do think a lot of people probably would try and find an alternative way. But no one's going to make any money from that, are they? So
no. And that's where, my doubtful kind of head or my skeptical head comes on, because I just think, you know, it's the same with the teeter tests. You know, we did Ted for the first time last year. Obviously, he hadn't had any vaccinations since he joined us. So it was about 6.5 years, and thinking, you know, off of the Professor Schultz stuff, that it's about 7 years minimum that they reckon that there's coverage. So I thought, well, he's up to about 7 years since his last round of jabs. I'll test him, and he still had full coverage. So it just shows. And when I speak to people about that, they're like, I didn't even realize that was an option. I didn't even realize that was a thing.
Yeah.
And I just think, well, surely we should always be testing before treating with everything. And then the same for worms, same for, you know, fleas and ticks. If we haven't got them, why are we putting those treatments on? We don't put those treatments on our kids every month just in case.
Yeah,
so definitely. We do that for our dogs. So it's a very, yeah, you know, it's taking a much more proactive approach by testing first.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is as well, these kinds of issues, like with fleas and worms, like, you know, most of the worms and parasites are harmless in a way that, yeah, they might cause your dog a little bit of GI upset and things like that, but they are treatable, and they're treatable quickly. You can get rid of them quickly, and, you know, they're not going to be life-threatening for your pet. So if your dog does get worms, then, you know, you can deal with it. It's not, you know, they're not going to die from it. Some, obviously, parasites are a little bit more technical, but, I mean, most of the treatments aim at just even just the slightest little thing. But like fleas as well, I mean, yeah, you can get flea bites and things like that, but unless you know your dog is at risk as well specifically, I think that a lot of it should be based around whether or not your dog is at risk. Because I mean, my dogs don't mingle with other dogs so I know that they're not at risk of contracting lots of things because they don't mingle with other dogs. I mean, yeah, we live in the countryside, so they do have access to like wild animal poo and things like that. But I don't give them a worming treatment every month or, you know, every 3 months, because I just think, you know, if they get worms, it's not the end of the world. But I mean, we've been worm counting now for 6 years. Yeah. And I mean, they've never had worms. But yeah, so I mean, I think it is a massive problem. I think these treatments are getting overused, and not enough is being spread about what is happening afterwards in terms of like the knock-on effects. Like you say with Shadow, you have a deep gut feeling that everything that happened to him in his puppyhood with regards to the pharmaceuticals are what caused these things later on in life. And this is the thing. People think because your dog doesn't have an immediate reaction to it that they're never going to have an immediate reaction to it. But reactions can happen weeks, months, even years after the initial contact with that pharmaceutical, can't they?
Yeah, and I think the other part of his story was that potentially that when he was neutered as well from a, I can never say it, hypothyroidism, that a lot of what happened to him and a lot of his symptoms subsequently fitted that diagnosis, and neutering can be part of that because obviously you're messing with the endocrine system at that point. So the fact that he was neutered in the February and then come July when the autoimmune kicked in,
yeah,
I can't obviously, and I'll never know, but there is a lot that could be, you know, was that part of the trigger, not just, so he had that pharmaceutical assault, then his endocrine system that was just maintaining everything, then you've taken a part of that away, and it's just a cascade of events afterwards. Whether that was part of it, I'll never know, but you know, it just makes me sad that none of those things were ever discussed. And even when I came up from the RVC and I said, you know, I take it that you're never going to recommend he has vaccinations again, and they said, oh no, he'll be fine. And I'm like, he's just
really
there's 10 other dogs that have had this autoimmune disease, and you're telling me that you think it's okay for him to still have, you know, annual vax. I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't get on board with that. It makes
vaccinations aren't supposed to be given to sick dogs anyway.
Exactly. But when he went to Spaniel Aid, I wrote at length what had happened to him, and they actually put in his notes when they put him up for adoption that he wasn't to be vaccinated again because of his health condition. So I was really pleased when I saw that they'd actually taken that on board.
That's good.
So yeah. And I know that he's landed on his paws, and he's with the right family now in the right space where he's not overwhelmed. So it was the right thing, but it was just horrid at the time. Just
I can imagine. Yeah, it must have been so difficult. No, I can't imagine. I can't imagine how that would have felt, to be honest. But like you say, I think if he is settled down and you do know that, then hopefully that can sort of make you feel a bit better.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Also, he keeps me company. Bless him. He's my little aren't you, mate? Now he's quiet.
Now he's quiet. Oh, bless him. I don't mind. This is a podcast about dogs. I said it before. So he's absolutely, he's invited. He's invited.
He's just saying his side of the story. That's all.
Yeah. You say, don't forget about this bit, Mum.
Remember that.
So I mean, obviously we have looked at your the downside and a few of the upsides to your turbulent journey into kind of holism, but I mean, how has it changed your life personally? Like, you know, what kinds of things what kind of impact has it had on you?
I think in every way, shape and form possible, because it's changed my approach to my diet, the way I look after myself, my food choices, UPF, kind of getting a real understanding about that. And particularly now, as I kind of enter perimenopause, how I support my own body through those changes and understanding hormones. And so all of those deep dives into all of those subjects have been so helpful, not just for the dogs and Ted and Shadow previously, but for me as well, yeah, as a person. So I think, you know, it's been massive in terms of how it's impacted my life, because, you know, I feel so much better by making better food choices and cutting out the UPF and doing all of those things. Because when you start looking at kibble and how that's made and the impact of that it essentially is a UPF, and then you start delving into fresh food for you and the impact UPF has for us, it's just a knock-on effect. It's just it's all connected, and we are the same, you know.
Yeah.
Fresh real food is what we're all designed to eat, and that's what we need to be working towards.
Just for everyone that might not know, UPF meaning ultra processed food.
Like, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
You're just in the lingo, don't you? You just get caught in it. You just say it because it's part of every day for us.
Yeah, you forget that people still don't know. It's easy to forget as well, especially when you sort of like in the space constantly. But no, I agree. That's one of the ways it changed for me as well. I think when I started learning about dog food in particular, and then it sort of happened at the same time. I was sort of learning about the dogs as well, but learning about people, because obviously my dad got diagnosed with motor neuron disease, and he sadly passed away in 2018. Oh, and that was the same year, well, Betty actually passed away 2 weeks after my dad, so that was horrific. So not only did I fall down the rabbit hole of what's happened to my dog, you know, she was 2.5 years old, why couldn't I save her? I also wanted to know why, you know, my dad, who had worked two jobs all his life to save for his retirement, you know, all he wanted to do was buy a little bungalow on the beach at Scarborough, which is so simple. That's all he wanted to do. And then he got this horrific disease, and basically he was gone within like 12 months. And I was thinking, it's got to be something to do with the environment. It's got to be, you know, they don't know what causes it, they don't know how to fix it, it's got to be something that we are doing wrong in our lifestyle, you know, it's got to be. And that kind of, the two together, sort of sent me on this massive like overhaul of, right, I'm inspecting absolutely everything. I'm cutting out all the processed food, I'm going organic, you know, I'm making everything from scratch. And it kind of does, but again, I think it's from those experiences, is it? I think when you've felt so much pain from something, that is what gives you the motivation to change. And I think that's why a lot of people do kind of find it difficult to understand, because they haven't actually experienced just how bad it can get. Which obviously we don't want people to have to experience. No, that.
We don't want you to have to go through that. That's why we want to try and get, you know, in when they're young, when they're puppies, so that you can make all those choices, which, you know, and that's not saying not to, I'm definitely not saying don't vaccinate and stuff like that. But let's do our research and let's just think about titer tests and, you know, maternal antibodies before we start doing all those things, before and think about the effects that chemical wormers potentially can have, and look at all the amazing natural and holistic options that are available before we start going down that route. You know, it's about educating ourselves. And the other thing for me, I think, as well, is, you know, this whole thing about my dog eats better than me. I'd love to see that whole kind of hashtag change to kind of like me and my dog nutritionally thriving or something, because it's about both of us doing it. It's a journey for both of us. It's not just, you see all these amazing bowls and, you know, these Instagram worthy dinners, but they kind of, then they'll be like, well, you know, I'm a beans on toast because I don't have time to cook for myself. And I'm like, yeah, but we need to be around for our dogs just as much as they need to be around for us. So we should if we're spending that much time on the dogs, we should be spending that time on us too, because it'll benefit us in the long run as well, not just them.
Definitely. And I think, you know, I've been working on a program that pet parents can do to kind of learn how to make fresh food for the dogs, whether it's cooked or raw, because obviously not everybody's on board with raw. And one of the things I constantly get asked is about supplements. And one of the things that annoys me is how companies market supplements specifically for dogs. And so in my program, I tend to sort of, you know, I use fresh whole food options so that people can actually see that what you have at home in your, on your spice rack, you know, in your, on your herb rack, these are the things that you can add to your dog's bowl. So you can actually share the foods. Like, there's no reason why your food should be different. If you're feeding raw, then obviously that's slightly different, because we're not going to be eating half of that stuff. But I mean, like the additions, the superfoods, vegetables, everything, it's all the same. And, you know, if you are in a position in life where you are not eating those foods, so you can't just share them with your dog, because then people are saying, well, I don't eat that. Well, you actually should be, you know, so why don't you try it together? Start the fresh food journey together and see what happens, because 9 times out of 10, you make small changes to your diet, you do see massive improvements in your own health as well. And it doesn't take much, does it?
No. It's the small little changes that make the big difference over time. I know that there's always this big debate within the kind of, you know, fresh feeding community about balance over time versus balancing every bowl. And I kind of sit in the middle, whereas balancing with purpose, kind of understanding the bits that we do need to be adding. So, you know, your vitamin E source, you know, those things that might just be a little bit wonky and might be a little bit low, but understanding why we need them and where they would come from. So that's where we're adding them to a bowl. So there's a purpose behind the choices that we're making, rather than just throwing everything in a bowl. There's a reason. We're understanding the reason, but that applies to us as well. You know, why would I need to eat that avocado, or why would I need to have, you know, an egg or this or whatever? It's because of, these are the things that it provides me. And I think that's the bit that's missing out of the nutrition picture for all of us.
Yeah.
Not just dogs, for humans as well.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And like, I mean, I did a reel today about complete imbalance and balance over time. And it was basically just to say to people, stop obsessing about complete imbalanced. I mean, I think everybody is capable of feeding their dog homemade dog food, but you do have to learn about what your dog needs before you do it. That is, you know, you're gonna have to do that work. And it is just about what nutrients are required within the bowl and where can you get them from. And it's not in the form of a tablet, or, you know, it's not in the form of a dried up biscuit. It is whole foods. And you can actually create fully, if you want to do complete and balanced, you can create complete and balanced meals from fresh foods, but it's just far more complicated than using a variety of fresh foods and getting those sources and just not being so, what's the word, kind of particular about the you know what I mean? But no, I 100% agree. But I think a lot of people don't know about food in general. Like, you know, people can say, right, I'm going to eat these chia seeds, but they probably will eat the chia seeds because they saw on social media they should eat chia seeds.
Yeah, the purpose thing, actually understanding why we're putting those things on our diet or their diet. Well, it's going to provide this nutrient, or it's going to give a more bioavailable option to the body to be able to use this vitamin E or zinc or whatever the goodie that's in there is, but actually understanding why we're doing it. So I get both sides of the discussion.
And
you know, we have to balance every bowl, but then again, it comes down to that not your body isn't going to need that balance every single day, that there will be cyclical changes, there will be seasonal changes about how much you need of certain things. So aiming for every bowl just to me feels just a bit too much, and that we need to, it's over time, but understanding why we're adding those things in.
Yeah, no, definitely 100%. And I think that is definitely something that is lacking today for pet parents, isn't it? It's like, because people are constantly searching for that information. I commonly get asked, you know, I want to start making homemade dog food, but I'm scared that I'm not going to get the nutrients right. And I think people just need a simple formula to kind of where they can find this information, so they know, right, you know, where's my vitamin E coming from for this meal. And it's not about, you know, getting the measurements exactly right. It's making sure you've got something in there to cover the bases. But definitely, definitely. And I wish, you know, I think when I first started learning about it, well, food in general, but obviously for the dogs, I always wish there was that kind of resource for me, because I think that was something that I struggled. Like, I've had to kind of find that information from various different places along. I don't know if it's been the same for you,
yeah.
But in terms of especially kind of like education about canine nutrition in the UK, it's few and far between. And you've kind of just got to, there isn't sort of like one big Bible that says this is all about food and where you're going to get these nutrients from and da 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 da. You've kind of got to do your research and figure that out, which probably is what puts a lot of people off, I think.
Yeah, it just feels overwhelming. And I think because the kibble and the kind of the pet food market has got it so well done in terms of, you know, in this bag or in this, you know, tin is everything your dog's going to need for its entirety. Yeah. They've nailed it. They've got it. And they've put such a fear into everybody that they can't do that for themselves by using fresh whole food, because it's too scary, because their leg's going to fall off if you don't get, you know, the zinc right on Tuesday. And if the manganese is wrong on Wednesday, well, that's it, you've had it. Just so it's all of that is makes it feel so complicated. But the more that you get into it and understand it, and it doesn't even need, like, you don't need to have like this really in-depth, like, you know, PhD level of nutrition. It's just having an idea of just, okay, so the sunflower seeds might do this, and the, you know, this will do that. And as long as they're getting some of that over the course of the week, all of that's going to be great. And it's going in and bioavailable. And I think that's the key term. I think the body can actually utilize it. The body recognizes it and goes, oh, I know what to do with you. Hi, let's get to work and get on with it.
Yeah.
Rather than, I don't know what you are, some synthetic thing. You know, what are you? How can I use you?
Yeah, which, you know, which is going to come from a processed food as well, which comes from low quality ingredients. It's got loads of synthetic nutrients. It's got the controversial chemical toxic load, which comes with, you know, molds in the grains, all that kind of stuff. You know, the byproducts, the rancid fats that they spray on the kibble at the end, which is going to cause inflammation throughout the body and send the omega-3 to the omega-6 balance way out of whack, which, you know, people are adding oily fish 3 times a week. And yeah, that is helping with health, but the amount that omega-6 to omega-3 is off balance in commercial food, you need more omega-3 in the diet. But, you know, people don't know this. They're just taking this pet food and thinking, right, it's got a beautiful chicken breast on the front with a nice piece of broccoli. This is going to be the one. This is fresh. This is good for my dog.
And one blueberry in the bag. So it's all
one
good.
Blueberry in the bag. Yeah, that's realistically, though, that is like one. It is, though, isn't it? That's how shoddy it is. And it's so annoying. Yeah, well, we need to, this is what we need to do, we need to change that. Hopefully.
Yeah, I think it is just about increasing awareness around nutrition in general. And I think it, because it applies to us as much as it is to them, I think any steps in that direction has got to be good. And so much of the stuff that I end up watching is human based, and then I'm like, so how does that convert over to the dog? Oh, actually, it's pretty much the same. So, you know, and you end up kind of down those rabbit holes as well, particularly around gut microbiome and those types of things. They're all so connected. You just go for it and you're like, oh, that makes sense now. Inflammation in the gut, everything. Okay, got it. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. And I think because like people think that humans and dogs are so different, and yes, we are in some ways, but in terms of, you know, we're both mammals, and although our GI systems are different lengths and they take different time frames to digest food and move everything along, the way that it functions is essentially the same. You know, we have epithelial cells, we have microbiome, foods react the same way. You know, the colon does the same job in humans as it does in dogs. It just takes a different amount of time. It is essentially, you know, the same thing. Like you said earlier on, we are all designed to eat fresh food. So it's just about, you know, kind of making people feel like they can do it. That's what I want to do.
Yeah, the confidence and to not be scared about doing it, I think, and just actually and then see the difference that it has for them and their dogs. And they're like, oh, wow, look, they, you know, they've got more energy. Their coat's better. Their poos are better. You know, this has cleared up. This has happened because the body knows what to do with fresh stuff. It just doesn't know what to do with the overcooked synthetic stuff, unfortunately. And that's that's just the way it is.
Yeah, unfortunately. But not for long.
No, we're on a mission.
Yeah. So based on the back of that, what is the best thing about your natural journey that you have learned along the way? If you could pick one thing, what would it be?
I think it's just knowing that every dog is different, and that it's about just being flexible to being open to change. And especially as our dogs age and encounter different issues, that we don't have to get stuck in this food is going to work from 1 till 7 and then they're classed as a senior, so then they need this food. That actually it will fluctuate, and it could be season to season. It could be, you know, there could be so many other things that impact that. And just having that awareness and openness to think, oh, okay, so that happens when, you know, when that's fed in this month, but then actually in the winter that doesn't happen. So just kind of being aware of being able to do that, being aware to be for change basically, and that it's going to be different for every dog
at different times. I think one of the things as well is that you obviously doing what we do, you talk to a lot of people, and one of the things that I think it's, you know, it's something that I think we do need to talk about more is the fact that you can manipulate food to suit your dog. And I mean, there's lots of people who have said, I've tried my dog on raw and it really doesn't agree with them, you know, it just doesn't work. But, you know, have you tried them on raw, or have you tried them on raw so many different ways? Because, you know, some dogs can't tolerate raw, maybe, probably not, but there is a fresh food diet for every single dog. And it just trying one way of doing it isn't necessarily going to be the way that suits your dog. I mean, there's lots of dogs who can't tolerate, you know, organ meats, or they can't tolerate too much heart and lung in their diet. They can't tolerate vegetables because it basically just gives them the runs. You know, there are different ways you can manipulate every single meal, and you can take their energetics into account. You can take their epigenetics into account. You can take, you know, it could be something to do with medications that they're on at the moment, or that they've been on. It's literally just trying to find that balance. And I think that is what a lot of people don't realize. They just think that fresh food is a certain way. They think it's sort of like a bag of kibble. It's like it's a one type of food, and that if it doesn't work the first time, it's never going to work, which is why they tend to go back to the old way of feeding. Whereas in reality, fresh food is so diverse. You can literally serve
and flexible. And food energetics has been huge for Ted and I, because I hadn't, once I delved into it last summer, because he hates the heat, he doesn't cope well in the summer. And once I kind of twigged onto the whole food energetics and realizing that he's a fiery redhead hot dog, and I was cooling proteins, last summer was a different experience. That last in September, that freak kind of week of hot weather that we had, different dog from what I'd been having when he'd been on goat, lamb and venison during the summer earlier on. Different dog. And I'm like, whoa,
it's so amazing. It's like sometimes I think it's hard to get your head around as well, because you just, when you first start learning about energetics, you kind of think, really? No. But then when you actually try it, and then you see and that it works time after time, you're like, no way, you know, like it's magic.
It's magic. It's so cool. And you're just like, wow, it's just another tool to play with within fresh food that you've got. It might not work, but if it does, then you can use it. And just playing around with some of those other ideas is just is fascinating. And the same for supplements and other, you know, toppers and all of those things. It's been adaptive to change, and just being aware of that, you know, you can play around with a diet. It's not going to be a problem, and that you can adjust it to the dog that's in front of you in that moment of time, you know, doesn't have to be fixed.
I know. And I think, you know, I find a lot of the time as well, like say if you've got someone who comes to you with two dogs in the household, if they've got similar kind of energetic personalities, or they've got different kind of problems, but they're both from the same energetic standpoint, you can still feed them the same diet and they'll both be benefit in the same ways, which is another fascinating thing, because it's not like literally, you know, you've got to feed a hot dog rabbit and, you know, this kind of herb and that kind of vegetable, but it's literally, it can relate to some of the other energetics as well, which is another great thing, because it's not just a one energetics fits all.
It's just another rabbit hole, it really
is. Oh yeah I know I am so grateful that I fell down it though, because like it just transformed the way of, like, for you, I imagine, like with my dog Barney, he is like super hyperactive and he suffers with like slightest bit of stress and he's like going off on one, and then his gut's playing up and then he can't eat everything or anything because his gut's bad. But as soon as I started, oh, and then he's like snapping at Boris because he's grumpy. But as soon as I learned about energetics and started feeding him the cooling proteins, you know, like, and cutting out all of the hot stuff, he's like, he's just completely zen, you know. It's just, it's so magnificent. So maybe we need to do more about that as well.
100%, yeah, I think that, yeah, 100%. I think it's just, it's so underutilized, I think, as a,
yeah,
as just a platform to try, as a, you know, let's see how it works. Let's get, just, you know, do 6 weeks on some cooling proteins and see what happens. And, you know,
yeah, I think
can happen at that time.
It can, because, I mean, symptoms such as like itching and gunky ears and, you know, hot spots, those kinds of things can be alleviated. GI issues such as like diarrhea and, you know, just soft stools in general, they can be alleviated by changing the protein, and even changes in behavior. You know, dogs become better behaved when you change the diet to energetics. They can be happier. Like you say, they get more life. Just generally, it can work wonders for every single dog. And I think if you are having problems in any kind of way, if you don't try it, then you're missing out massively.
Yeah, because it has to be worth a shot, because, you know, there's thousands of dogs out there that it's working for. So it has to be worth a shot.
And it's not like you promoting the use of pharmaceuticals to try and control symptoms or behaviors. It's literally just food. So like, if it doesn't work, then you haven't caused any further damage. You haven't really, you know, that's it. That's great. So exciting.
I love it.
Me too. Oh, I'm loving this show. It's great. I love it. So if there are any other pet parents who may be struggling with kind of getting on board with fresh and natural feeding, what would be your one piece of advice for them? Or maybe a couple pieces of advice if you've got them. So what would you say to pet parents who are struggling right now with the concept of holistic methods and all that kind of crazy stuff that we've just been talking about?
I think it's that no one's going to know their dog better than they will. They're the expert in their dog, because they're with them all the time. I think it's, and I think this is where, again, it's keeping a diary or keeping a note and just watching your dog and observing, because all of those little things, whether it's skin or behavior or GI, looking, you know, checking the poo, you know, all of those things, they're always giving us little signals and little signs. But we just have to become a little bit more open to the fact that we can see them and we can track them. And yeah, it might feel a bit like, oh, I've got to write it in the diary or something, but it doesn't have to be that kind of, like, you know, day one in the Big Brother house. It doesn't have to get like that. It's more just kind of looking for those signs. And when you see things that don't quite fit a normal pattern, just taking a note and then build a team around you. Like I said with Ted at the beginning, you know, he's got his osteo, Nikki, who's amazing. He's got his holistic vet, Birgit, who's incredible. And then obviously I'm working with him with his food. He doesn't see a conventional vet unless, touch wood, unless we have to. I work predominantly with Birgit, his holistic vet. But build that team around you and look at it from a long-term investment point of view in terms of long-term health. And I always think about, it's putting years in life rather than life in years rather than years in life, because it's about having quality. I know that Ted potentially could be having joint issues, but I want to work proactively now and make sure that I can support him through diet, through the osteo, through the acupuncture and his herb medicines that he gets from Birgit, so that he can be mobile. I don't want him at 12, 13, 14, you know, hobbling around. I still want to go on walks with him. He still wants to go out on walks. So why should that be any different from me as I age, particularly as I enter perimenopause? I'm making sure I'm thinking about my diet. So I think it's awareness. I think that's what it boils down to. It's just awareness. Ask questions. There's so many people and visit lots of little camps. That's my little phrase, flexi camping. Visit all the camps, see what fits for you.
Yeah, definitely.
You're going to take a little bit from everybody. Don't be offended if you don't like all of one camp, but you might like one bit and then you take another bit. And if you're not quite ready to do the whole leap into fresh food, the toppers, you know, the 20% rule of at least getting some of that fresh stuff in can have such a massive impact. So just be open to the fact that there's more than one way, I think, is the
definitely
motto.
Definitely. Yeah. There is more than one way to feed a dog. And it's, like you say, it's your dog. And you know, and it's not just based around, you know, just your dog. It's based around you as well and your beliefs and your values and your perceptions. You know, if you're not that bothered about going fully organic, that's fine. You know, as long as you're getting some fresh. I mean, to be fair, it's quite unrealistic to feed a completely organic diet to your dog unless you've got like millions of quid in.
Yeah.
In the bank, millions of quids in bank. I mean, I definitely don't feed my dogs organic food because I can't afford it. But obviously they say that if you do want the best of the best, then organic is the way to go. So, you know, and don't be put off by what other people are doing just because it's not what you're doing. You know, like everybody's journey is important, everybody's journey matters, and wherever you are on that journey, it's still relevant, you know.
And just be mindful of the fact that for 98% of us fresh feeders, our bowls don't look like they do on Instagram. Instagram worthy bowls are beautiful, don't get me wrong, they look incredible, but that's not what Ted's bowl looks like on a daily basis. I couldn't promise you that. So I think that as much as they are beautiful, that also kind of puts a bit of the fear factor into people that I've got to make my dog's bowl look like that. It looks incredible, don't get me wrong, and I think it does a brilliant service in terms of demonstrating what bowls could look like. But you've got to remember that that's a really small portion, and it's probably only for that was their breakfast, but actually their dinner is literally just
slopped on.
however you're going to serve it to them. So, yeah, just take those with a pinch of salt. Just look at them for being beautiful pictures rather than as a model to look towards.
Yeah, just look at them for what's in the bowl and sort of like write it down on your list of foods that you can feed. Oh, great. Now I love that. I love those little pieces of advice. I think they're great. And I think hopefully, you know, if people are listening who have been thinking about feeding fresh food, then they will feel a bit more inspired. Or if they've been thinking about going a bit more natural with like vaccines and wormers, because I mean, even if your dog is at risk and they have to have a particular vaccine, then there are still ways that you can support them naturally. You can do like detox, you can use different homeopathic remedies surrounding the time of the vaccine, which is going to help protect them and protect their immune system. So, you know, definitely if you need some more advice on that, then reach out to, you know, either me or Stacey or anyone else. You know, there are ways that you can still support them.
100%. Yeah. And there will be cases where people have to do it for boarding or for whatever, although a lot of boarders and daycares can now start taking titer tests. When I was daycare and boarding, I was allowed to take a titer test as proof of vaccination. So that I think the tide gently is starting to turn. I think we're slowly getting there, but it's a marathon, not a sprint, so it's going to take a little while, I think.
Yeah, definitely slow and steady wins the race.
Absolutely.
Okie dokie. So I think, you know, a nice way to kind of end the show would be for you to tell us a little bit about Hozo Hounds and what you offer and where people can find you.
Well, I'm on all the platforms apart from YouTube yet. That's coming, as just Hozo Hounds. I post quite a lot of my adventures with Ted, his food, and ranting about pharmaceuticals on my Facebook page quite a bit. Me never. I'm just starting to offer consults. I'm doing a load of case studies at the moment, so that's been fascinating. I had some really amazing dogs come through with some incredible kind of situations, and working with them has just been awesome. You know, working with holistic vets as well. So yeah, there's loads that's happening, and hopefully the YouTube channel. That's what I want to get going with, my Flexi Camping Fridays.
Okay. Ooh. Mm. So can you give us a sneak peek of what it's going to be about, or is it a secret until the big reveal?
The Flexi Camping thing is a phrase that my best friend and I came up with about this whole thing about visiting all the camps on it. So you're looking at vaccinations, for example, and you look at all the different sides of the discussion, and your camp. But it's okay to visit all the other camps. There's no judgment. There's no kind of animosity. We're just visiting and we're saying hi, picking up our information. And then we go away and make a decision that resonates for us and our family and our situation and our risk factors, all of those other things.
Yeah.
And I just want to discuss those subjects. Kind of, I want to just get into the nitty gritty and offer all sides of the story so that people can go, oh, well, I like that bit, but I'm not so sure about that bit. And that bit works for me. Because I think the more that we break down those barriers around the information, because so much of it feels like kind of what do they call it, fenced off gate, like protected, that you can't speak about that unless you're in that arena, and you can't speak about that unless you're in that. Well, no, it's the information's there. Let's openly discuss it, but not argue with each other. We can be adults, we can discuss it politely and inform each other, and we'll all learn from each other. And I think that's what Flexi Camping Friday is going to be about. So it's coming, but I need Expo out the way first, because that's the crazy for the next couple of weeks. And then once Expo's out the way.
Yeah. Oh, yes, of course, the Expo.
Oh, yeah. Love of my life. It's wicked. It's just epic. So, yeah, and we'll actually get to meet in person, which will be amazing, won't it? So,
I know. Yeah. I know it's going to be great.
T-shirt on, waving everybody in.
It's going to be just one of those events where, I mean, I have met so many people online, especially in the past few months, like with the podcast and through Instagram and stuff, and I know loads of them are going to the Expo. So I'm so excited to meet everybody, because, like, it's one thing communicating on social media, but then when everybody's like in a room, there's just like this big hype, isn't there? And it's just
Were you there last year? I can't remember who. You're for a treat. And I mean, Rita Hogan, I love all the speakers, but Rita particularly, you know, I'm not worthy, she's just incredible. So
I love Rita. I'm really excited.
Yeah, Fango and Carol Microbiome, you know. Don't get me wrong, they are all incredible, but Rita is just, she's incredible. So I'm really, really excited about meeting her and listening to her speak. So, yeah, and there's only a few tickets left now. So if anybody wants to come, they better hurry up and get some tickets. So,
yeah, I've got mine.
Good. You're on my magic spreadsheet.
Yay!
The thing is, what makes me laugh is when people come through the door, I recognize them off their handles of Instagram, or I know their dogs more than I know who they are. And I'm like, oh, you've got Rufus and so-and-so. And they're like, how do you know that? And I'm like, I just remember off of when I deal with all the pictures, because I put them into the slideshow. So yeah, can't wait.
You see, my problem is I speak to people who are mainly like their dogs on Instagram. So like, I always have to say, you know, if you see me, and you come up to me, tell me your dog's name, because then I'll know who you are. Because I mean, they don't really put pictures of themselves on the dog's account. And I'm always like,
wear a badge with their Instagram handle on. I think that would be really hard. I still might suggest I'll just take a reel of stickers and people could just write it on and put their Instagram handles on, just because I think so many people, like you say, know each other by handles rather than actually who the human is behind it. So
I think that's definitely a good idea. That stuff, because it always makes me feel really rude, like I should know who they are, you know what I mean? And I'm like, I'm really sorry, I don't know who you are. I feel really embarrassed to say it.
And then they go, I'm so sorry, like, oh my god, we've been talking for 3 months and I don't know.
Or 3 years. Oh, well, thank you ever so much for jumping on with
me.
Thank
you for having me.
It's been such fun chatting to you tonight, and learning about your story, and albeit it was such kind of a sad start for you, you have kind of created something absolutely amazing from it. So I'm super happy for what comes next for you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's 2024 feels cool. So yeah, I'm excited. So we'll see what happens.
Yes, let's do this. Okay then, Stacey. Well, if you ever want to come back and chat some more, then I'm always happy to have you.
We'll have to do a post-expo one, won't we?
Yeah, we will. Yeah, the lowdown on the expo. Yeah. Okie dokie. Well, we'll catch up with you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another great episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. Don't forget to check out the caption for any links discussed here today. And please, if you enjoyed the show, follow along and listen for free on your favourite podcast app. If you have any questions or would like to share your story, feel free to email me at mydogmademedoitnaturally@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Purpose of this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be substituted as advice from a veterinarian or other professional. It does not form a client relationship with me, the host, or any guest speakers, and any information is not intended to and does not diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. And my guests express our own views, thoughts, and opinions as individuals, and the podcast neither endorses or opposes the views, products, or services discussed here. If your pet is ill, always seek advice from your veterinarian. I am not a veterinarian, and I do not treat disease or offer medical advice.